Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of, believe it or not, January 3rd, 10th, and 17th. We're dealing with a triple issue this week, and we're joined by Associate Editor Kevin Clark. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Well, Kevin, we haven't had you on before, but we're excited to have you come down the hall to talk with us a bit about a subject we've been writing about in our magazine for a while, but we have an editorial on it this week, which is Sudan and the political situation in that African country. Maybe you can kind of bring us up to speed where things are. We're talking right now. It's just shortly before the new year. What's happening there on January 9th?
Well, we're reaching a sort of a critical crossroads for the nation of Sudan. There's been two civil wars and just decades of violence since independence in 1956 that has led to as many as 2.5 million deaths and a dislocation of millions of people. And what's happening on January 9th is a UN-monitored referendum vote in the South. Most observers are pretty confident that the southern population of Sudan, which is primarily Christian and traditional beliefs, people who follow traditional African beliefs, are very likely to vote for independence from the north. So the civil war is going to become a finally result in two different countries. Sudan is going to split into Muslim north, Christian animist south. And there's a lot of concern about what's going to happen on January 10th, on the day after that vote is taken.
So the main concern is that if this vote, in fact, goes the way people are saying it's going to go, how is the capital, the government, in the north going to react? Is that correct?
That is completely the situation. The referendum requires a 60% vote in favor of secession for that to go through. Millions of people have already registered. 3.5 million people have registered to vote. Thousands upon thousands of people from the south who were dislocated by the civil war into the north have been, in the last few weeks, have been coming down into the south not only to vote. They didn't, according to the terms of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement, they didn't have to physically be in the South to vote. They could have voted in the North. They've decided to come down into the South to vote because, frankly, a lot of them fear that there's going to be retaliatory violence in the North against these southern Sudanese communities that have evolved over the years in the North.
Now, what's at stake? Why does the North want to hang on to the South?
I think anyone who's driving a car and listening to this might have a pretty good idea. It's sort of the curse of the modern era. It's oil. It's why a lot of countries go to war. I can't think of a couple at this moment. But the Sudanese South Sudan has substantial reserves of oil. I think article I read said there might be as many as 6 million barrels of oil in reserve in the south. The processing facilities are typically located in the north, so the oil gets shipped up to the north for processing, for refinement. Of course, once the south determines to secede, they have every reason to want to bring those process the refinement facilities down to the south, keep the oil revenue to themselves. And that's part of the reason there is a widespread fear of violence breaking out. It's because they didn't resolve this really tricky, difficult issue of how to share the oil revenue, with most of the oil located in the south.
Right. We point out in our editorial that questions of the sharing of oil profits, borders, citizenship, none of this has been hashed out
there
yet.
There are a lot of really troubling loose ends left hanging, and that's part of the criticism of the international community, the United Nations, the Security Council, the United States, and the regional actors that, there's been a lot of activity in the last 2 months towards the success of the referendum, but it would have been perhaps more helpful if this activity, this fevered activity that we're seeing now, had been taking place maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago. There was a luxury of time building up to the referendum, and now we're playing diplomatic bucket brigade trying to put this fire out before it breaks out. There are only 20,000 UN troops on the ground in the south along the border, and no one believes that's enough troops to prevent violence from flaring if it does. And there is indications of northern troops already massing along the border in preparation for, one can only guess. The president of the north, Omar al-Bashir, has in recent days suggested that he is quite willing to accept the outcome of the referendum, whatever it may be, which is a positive signal and is being interpreted as such by the State Department. But there are other people who think whatever al-Bashir wants may not be, you know, truly relevant here. There is powerful military forces in the high command of the northern Sudanese military who really don't want to see the South secede. And another possible wrinkle here would be what happens in Khartoum if Bashir accepts the referendum and other people don't want to.
Khartoum being the capital of Sudan currently.
The Muslim North Sudan.
Muslim North.
Yeah. Juba being the southern unofficial capital.
And how much time, how long has this been scheduled, this vote?
Well, the CPA, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, was signed in 2005. So we've had 5 years to prepare for this vote. These things were scheduled along a continuum so that certain stages would be met and deadlines were passed. A lot of things were left to the last minute. And, you know, partly through the fault of frankly, the al-Bashir regime, which was dragging its feet on a lot of these things. They didn't want to. Their subliminal message might have been, we don't want a referendum to take place. And they managed to drag their feet long enough for the contemporaneous referendum that was supposed to take place in Abyei, which is a central province, a much disputed central province of Sudan. That's been called off completely, and that's not even scheduled now. That was supposed to also take place on January 9th.
Now, some bishops from Sudan, southern Sudan, recently visited this country through Catholic Relief Services. How are they negotiating this? Obviously, the political situation is pretty fragile. Have they come out one way or the other on this question?
Well, I think much like the American bishops, the Sudanese bishops' conference is not going to explicitly endorse an outcome of the referendum. But they have issued a pastoral letter. Sort of calling on everyone, whatever the outcome of the referendum, to show restraint, to show willingness to accept the will of the people, and to prevent violence, and not engage in an attempt to resolve this thing with rifle barrels when it could be resolved at a ballot box. They've also encouraged the Christmas letter from the Sudan bishops to the people of Sudan, encouraged them not to be afraid. And you might say that that's sort of an endorsement of being courageous enough to vote for a referendum, because there is a widespread fear among the southerners that to vote for a referendum is to vote for a renewed civil war. So the bishops are urging the Sudanese to show restraint, urging people to get out and get registered and to vote. And they've also called on the international community to stand up to their responsibilities and commitments to protect the non-combatant populations of the South from any violence associated with this referendum. You know, there's something we mentioned in the editorial, the responsibility to protect, which is sort of a new idea in diplomatic terms, but one that has been signed onto by most of the UN states in a 2005 World Summit Agreement from a General Assembly in New York. And basically it commits the international community to intervene first diplomatically with as many peaceful means as possible to prevent war crimes, genocide, crimes against non-combatants. And even if that means intervening when a national authority does not respect those conditions. So in other words, if the northern Sudanese are not going to protect non-combatants in the south, we are sort of committed to assume that role. And the United States specifically has signed on to intervene to the point of military intervention to prevent genocide, prevent war crimes by a couple of the most recent national security agreement and the quadrennial defense review have both included statements of commitment to prevent genocide and war crimes against non-combatants.
And now, is the worry here that this could become another Rwanda? Are we talking about that kind of scale of violence?
Yes, we are. There's already been more than 2 million people killed there in the years of fighting. We've seen what, frankly, people are capable of in Darfur, the neighboring province, which is also heading towards very shaky conditions in the near future. So it's the kind of violence we would associate with genocide, the liquidation of entire village, men, women, and children. This has happened in Sudan repeatedly. So there is there's a real threat of that level of danger to the non-combatant communities, particularly the people of the south.
You mentioned there's been this kind of feverish run-up for diplomatic initiatives in the last couple of months. What has the United States, specifically the Obama administration, what have they done?
They've been very active. They've been part of that feverish run-up, I should say. They've been very active on this as the clock has ticked down. They have really done a full-court press, to use a metaphor that the president might like, to try and get this thing done peacefully. And, you know, today the State Department said again that it is still optimistic that this referendum can be executed without violence breaking out. You know, the sticking point remains Abyei province, which was not, you know, the borders were never successfully determined. Who gets to vote there was never successfully determined. You have two tribes competing for control of that province, one associated with the southern interests, one associated with northern interests. And frankly, there's a lot of oil under the ground there. And there are a lot of refinement facilities in that province. So both sides on this possible civil war really want to get their hands on this one central province of Sudan. And it's really unfortunate that the status of that province has not been resolved, because that promises to be a flashpoint on January 10. And even if we get past January 10, it promises to be something like the Kashmir of Sudan for decades to come if it's not resolved. The State Department and the Obama administration have been very active in trying to use a carrot and stick with the Bashir regime. They sent Senator Kerry. Now, we can't talk to Bashir, unfortunately, directly, because he's got two war crimes indictments hanging over his head from the International Criminal Court in The Hague. So the United States is not capable by law of really negotiating with him. They have sent Senator Kerry there in November, and he offered he laid the Obama administration's offer on the table, which is essentially, if you get through this process peacefully and you accept the outcome of the referendum, whatever it might be, the United States would take Sudan off the list of terrorist sponsoring states. Now, this would be a huge boon to them because it opens up all kinds of diplomatic and economic opportunities to Sudan. So that's the carrot. The stick is, if he leaves Khartoum again, he's likely to be arrested. He's left the country twice and has not been arrested, but both times to countries that have signed on to the ICC terms, so he should have been arrested. But I don't think if he leaves again, he's going to, and this ends in violence, he probably will be finally arrested under those indictments.
There is a certain amount of, as we say in the editorial, Sudan fatigue, even people who follow this issue, because this has been an ongoing civil strife for decades. For the average observer, for the average Catholic, obviously CRS, these organizations are trying to bring it to the public's attention. How do we get beyond the Sudan fatigue? Why should we be paying attention particular way to this issue?
Well, I think the bottom line is, if we don't, it would have been great if we had been paying more attention a year ago or 2 years ago. It's great that it's getting this focus now, and hopefully it's enough. But if it's not, it's going to mean something quite like Rwanda. And to America's enduring shame, we stood by and did nothing while a million people were killed in Rwanda, when a very small intervention could have prevented that. I guess it's a question for us as a civilized society: are we going to do that again? Are we going to sit by and watch a stronger military force try to, just inflict its power interests on unwilling, subjugated people, who in this case are our fellow Catholics, primarily in the South? Now, this is a much more challenging situation than Rwanda, frankly, because the militaries they've already shown a willingness to fight. And they're better equipped now. So they're ready to fight each other. And it's going to be very hard for the United Nations to intervene, particularly with the kind of force it has on the ground now. It might require a European/American-style capability to intervene and put a stop to any widespread bloodshed. That's going to be a very tricky proposition for any administration to get widespread acceptance by the American people.
Yes, it would seem in wake of Afghanistan and Iraq, not just in the United States, but in Britain and Europe in general, it would be very hard to mobilize the kind of the forces that might be needed.
And yet, all of these countries have signed on to the responsibility to protect. So are we paper tigers? Do the words mean anything? We have made these commitments. This is going to be the first major test of that. You know, there's not a lot of optimism that Rwanda is not going to happen again in Sudan.
Well, we'll look towards the date 10 days from now, January 9th, and then, more importantly, the day after, to see what happens. And we'll ask Kevin maybe to weigh in again on our blog to kind of give us a report on the outcome. But we want to thank you for your reporting on this and for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Tim. I'll walk down the hallway anytime you want.
All right. I want to thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. And again, this is a three-week break we have between our next issue, which will be dated January 24th. But online during that time, we have a review of Inside Job from Karen Sue Smith, as well as a profile of the Catholic worker Tom Cornell from George Anderson. Reminder that you can respond to our podcast at americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.